present beautiful music. This is KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. Ronald Reagan has pushed closer to President Ford's lead in delegates as both strive for a first ballot nomination at the GOP National Convention. I'm Rita Sands reporting on the CBS Radio Network. In state caucuses and conventions in Iowa, Delaware, Colorado, Texas, and Washington State over the past 2 days, Reagan won 55 more delegates and President Ford 38. The candidates need 1,130 for a first ballot nomination. And right now, Reagan has 932 to Mr. Ford's 1,005. Democrat Jimmy Carter tightened his claim to his party's nomination by picking up 20 more delegates from Texas and 6 more from Arkansas. Carter has delayed until Tuesday the announcement of who he'd like on his panel of distinguished Americans that will help him select a running mate. CBS News continues after this.
We're the fresh guys from Wonder Bread. Give us a squeeze and feel the freshness for yourself. We're wrapped warm from the oven in Stay Fresh wrappers. You can feel it when you squeeze us on a shelf.
Yes, sir, because I'm a fresh guy from Wonder Bread.
Hey, what about me?
In my Stay Fresh wrapper, I'm a star.
What a lot of crust. Every loaf of Wonder's wrapped warm from the oven. We're the fresh guys from Wonder Bread.
Fresh Wonder Bread, buns and rolls, too.
Money doesn't go very far these days, and school budgets are getting tighter all the time. This is Lawrence Johnson for What's New in Learning, heard every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network. And tomorrow I'll tell you about a teacher in Minnesota who is teaching other teachers how to economize when buying educational materials. The fledgling teachers have a limit of $5 to spend, and some of their best buys are coming from garage sales, auctions, and thrift shops. For the full story about this approach to stretching money, listen to What's New in Learning tomorrow over the CBS Radio Network.
Canadian air travel may come to an end in 2 hours. A story from Al Pervin of station CFCF in Montreal.
The nation's airline pilots have been told to stay off the job, not because of a dispute of their own, but because of a battle between the federal government and air traffic controllers. Ottawa won an injunction forcing the controllers to stay on. The controllers had voted to strike because they're unhappy with government efforts to expand the use of the French language in Canadian airspace. The pilots decided the dispute itself jeopardized safety. Their association president, Ken Mealy, says controllers might not work normally with an injunction over their heads.
A legal injunction, when invoked with a factory worker, a truck driver, a postal worker, what have you, is a pretty effective weapon. But when utilized against a professional air traffic controller and his responsibilities, it's totally ineffective.
The controller's president, Jim Livingston, is obviously pleased.
I think my association shares Mr. Maley's concern for the safety of the aviation system in Canada.
Canada's pilots have asked pilots from other nations not to fly into this country. Al Pervin for CBS News, Montreal.
Administration sources say the United States is considering a helicopter evacuation of Americans from Lebanon if fighting continues to block the overland route to Damascus. An evacuation convoy, including hundreds of Americans and Britons, was supposed to leave Beirut yesterday, but heavy shelling on the escape route forced a postponement. They'll try again in about 1 hour from now. Sources indicate President Ford is reluctant to order a rescue airlift because it poses the risk of U.S. military involvement. New government statistics show racially imbalanced schools have been on the increase in the Northeast during the 1970s, while on the decrease in the Southern and border states. The survey said the most segregated schools are in the Northeast and Midwest, and those in the South the least segregated. Gary Orfield wrote the report for the Brookings Institute. He comments on the decrease of segregation in the South.
Well, it's been a very dramatic trend in the South, and there are many, many stably integrated areas which now have been integrated, both urban and rural, for 5 years or more. So I'd expect at a minimum to see this stabilize, and I think we'll really see some more integration in the South, since there have been a number of court orders in southern cities since the time of the 1974 data.
Now this.
Did you know that there are just about 21 million Americans over 16 who can't read? Not even a want ad or a job application. And another generation right behind them. Kids in the inner cities, on reservations, and in Appalachia who may never learn to read. This is Michael Learned for RIF. Reading is fundamental. It's a national nonprofit program with more than 400 local projects all over the country that help kids help themselves to read by giving them the incentive and the books. RIF's goal in this bicentennial year is to get 25 million books into the hands of 5 million children. Books they can choose for themselves and keep for their own. But to keep going and keep helping, RIF needs your help. Send a tax-deductible check or money order to RIF. It's tough to ask for money, and RIF knows it's tough to give it. But think how much tougher life would be if you couldn't read. Please, send your donation to RIF, Box 23444, Washington, D.C., 20024.
The Postal Service is tinkering with the idea of establishing an electronic mail system that promises overnight delivery of letters at the current rates. Letter senders could go to open pavilions at such places as shopping centers, enter a message written in block letters into a machine that could convert the message into digital form. The message would then be transmitted to a receiving unit near the person being contacted. A Postal Service spokesman says the first step is to find out if people really want such a system. Rita Sand, CBS News.
And here's a sports item. Football already is making its entry into the scene. The West rallied to a 35-17 win over the East in the 16th Coaches All-America football game at Lubbock, Texas. Henry Marshall of the University of Missouri made two spectacular catches and then grabbed two more scoring passes himself for the winners. Rick Jennings of Maryland scored twice in the opening quarter to give the East a temporary lead. Then final again, the West 35, the East 17 in the 16th Coaches All-America football game. Temperature now at 57 degrees downtown and at SeaTac Airport. Barometer reading 30.00 even and at last indication falling. Stay tuned now for CBS Radio Mystery Theater with your host, E.G. Marshall.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. I suppose that no self-respecting 17th century European castle would be without a ghost. The story I bring you deals with not one, but several ghosts. And what makes this tale all the more fascinating to me is the rumor that these particular ghosts weren't ghosts of people at all. And although they made no sound and were seen but rarely, they represented the absolute in terror. And a strange vendetta.
My little dog. What have you done to my dog, my lord?
I believe I told you, madam, that the dog is the emblem of fidelity. There will be no more dogs at Castle Cahor.
But I have never betrayed you. You cannot punish a dumb animal for a crime you think I have committed.
I will hear no more of this.
Oh, but you will, my lord. Someday you will. And then, too late, my lord, you will wish this terrible deed undone.
Our mystery drama, Castle Kerfol, was especially adapted from the Edith Wharton classic for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars Mercedes McCambridge. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
You know, I just thought of something.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, over 450,000 people have already bought 1976 Buicks.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, if you got all those people together, they'd probably disagree on nearly everything. Religion, politics, sports. I mean, people disagree on all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet all those people, over 450,000 of them, agree on Buicks. I think that's really socially significant, don't you?
No.
Buick. Dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Dig into those spare ribs.
Pick them up with your fingers. Don't worry about it. We've got wet ones, moist towelettes, the pop-up cleanup. They're ready when you need them. Nothing to unfold or unwrap. They're soft, they're strong, and they're disposable.
Would somebody pass me the wet ones?
When you want to wash up, but there's no place to wash. Up, up, the wet ones.
Wet Ones is also available in a new smaller size port-a-pack for purse or pocket.
Hey, are you the country doctor?
Yeah.
Well, I'm the United States of America, and I need help.
Okay. What do you want me to help you on?
Well, I've got 200 years of growing pains and 200 million people.
Where'd you hurt the most?
In my heart, because that's where those 200 million people live. Do you understand that?
Yeah. Because you're the United States of America.
Then what's wrong with me, Doctor?
Well, maybe it's because all the bad people in your heart is what makes you sick.
Gee, that sounds serious.
Yeah, because if your heart doesn't work, then nothing works.
Well, how do I cure the bad people in my heart?
Well, you could tell them to be good to each other and to love each other. And then maybe you'll feel much better.
Well, God bless America. Please.
From the Franciscans, with love.
I doubt if very many of us have ever gone or ever will go shopping for a castle. But if any of you do, there's one important thing to remember, one vital question to ask. Does the castle have a ghost? And if it does, what are its ghostly habits? This was a question which Paula Randall never bothered to ask, and this is what happened to her on her first look at the graceful turrets of Castle Kerfol.
A sudden, uncontrollable chill was my first reaction to the sight of the proud roofs and gables of Castle Kerfol. My second reaction was one of confusion mixed with a touch of anger. What in the world was I doing standing outside the iron gate leading to the obviously empty courtyard of a medieval castle? Did I really want to buy this? Or had I been talked into something? I could hear the pleasant voice of my host, Henri Lanrevin, saying,
"You really should buy Castle Kerfol, Paula. You would make a perfect hostess for that ancient manor. And it wouldn't be at all a bad thing for your business if you owned the most romantic house in Brittany."
"Oh, I don't think a great many people will come all the way to Brittany just to see a fashion show."
"Nonsense. People would travel half around the world to catch a glimpse of the breathtaking new Paula Randall fashions."
"That's spoken like a gallant Frenchman." "But with more gallantry than truth, I'm afraid. However, I will make an admission to you, Henri. I am beginning to want roots, to settle down somewhere."
"You really must see Castle Kerfol today. And today is perfect. I'm driving on to Quimper. You stay here and look around. I'll pick you up on my way back. The caretaker or his wife will show you around."
And so he left. And I suppose I was annoyed, because I couldn't see anyone around. And no one came to answer the bell. I tugged at it again. Still no sign of anyone. I pushed open the iron gate and stepped into the stone courtyard. And I stopped. I was facing the main building. And now I could see that this was a mere shell, a ruined front, through which the trees of the park beyond were clearly visible. But the rest of the house was still in its original splendid beauty. And as I started for the main door, suddenly, a dog barred my way. He was such a very beautiful little dog that for a moment he made me forget the splendid place he was defending. He was golden brown, silken-haired Pekingese, and there was anger in his large brown eyes. But to my surprise, he didn't snap or bark. He gradually stepped back as I stepped forward. And then I noticed another dog, a rough, brindled mongrel who limped on a lame leg. I remember thinking, why, there will be trouble now. As the first two animals were joined by a third, a white dog with long hair, who'd slipped out of a doorway. He was silently watching me. And so we stood, the dogs and I, watching each other. And then I decided to make friends. I stooped to pat the little Pekingese. He didn't bark or growl or take his eyes from me. He simply moved back slowly on noiseless paws and continued to stare at me, as did the other dogs. I felt very uneasy, and I called to them, "Do you know what you dogs look like, all of you? You look as though you'd seen a ghost. That's just how you look."
Paula, I hope you haven't been waiting here long. I thought you'd be up at the castle or with the caretaker.
There are no caretakers.
What? I don't understand. The family are anxious to sell the place. The caretaker or his wife should be around. What can have happened?
I don't know, but I saw no one.
Well, I must apologize. I never would have had you go if
No apology necessary. Even if I could have gotten in, I suspect the dogs would have stopped me.
What did you say about dogs?
Oh, yes. There were several dogs. They seemed to have the place to themselves.
Wait, you mean you actually saw them?
Oh, you can't miss them. I saw nothing else.
How many? I've always wondered.
Ali, don't tell me you've never been to Castle Kefal.
Often, but never on this day.
What day?
Well, I'd quite forgotten. If I'd remembered, Paula, believe me, I never would have brought you today. There is a story that goes with Castle Kefal, an unpleasant tale. As a matter of fact, an ancestor of mine named André Langlivin was mixed up in it. You know, every Breton house has its ghost story.
Well, what on earth has that to do with the dogs?
Those dogs are the ghosts of Kefal.
Oh, come on, Henri.
Oh, yes.
Do you expect me to believe that?
I shouldn't expect you to believe anything. But you told me you saw a lot of dogs. And I know there isn't a single dog at Castle Kefal.
At dinner that night, there was no more talk of Castle Kefal. But after the guests had left and Henri's mother had said goodnight, he brought me a shabby leather-bound volume from an upper shelf in his library.
Yeah, I think you should read this.
What is it?
You see.
Uh-huh. A History of the Assizes of the Duchy of Brittany, Quimper, 1702.
Mm-hmm. This book was written about 100 years after the affair at Castle Kefal. But I believe the account is taken almost literally from the judicial record.
There was a trial?
Yes, and a rather strange one. And my old ancestor, André de Langlivin, figures in it.
And the dogs, Henri, where do they come in?
Read it. And if you should be too frightened to continue, just yell, and I shall come galloping to the rescue.
I read until well past midnight, completely absorbed, caught up in this strange transcript of what took place in a courtroom over 400 years ago. But on this night, every word rang as clearly as if I were sitting there, listening to the judge, questioning the young and beautiful Anne de Cournol, the lovely young bride of the 62-year-old Baron Yves de Cournol, the master of Kefal Castle.
The prisoner must understand that if this court is to arrive at the truth, the prisoner must give us, in as much detail as she can remember, the entire history of her marriage to the Baron.
I understand, Your Lordship. What is it you wish to know?
The court has heard testimony from various witnesses about the first 2 years of your marriage to Yves de Cournot. But what puzzles me is how you and the Baron met.
My father took me to the holy shrine at Locronan. We were seeking absolution, doing penance for our sins. And that was where the Baron first saw me. And...
And?
He was smitten with me.
Well, how do you know that?
Because, Your Lordship, it was less than a week later that he came to my father's house with pack mules laden with gifts for my father and for me, and he asked for my hand.
Now proceed, madame.
Castle Kerfol was a very lonely place. And when my husband was away on his business matters, I was alone. It was my very deep sorrow that our marriage was childless, though there was never a word of reproach from my husband.
In short, madame, you would have the court believe that yours was an idyllic union with never a quarrel between you?
No. No, your lordship, we quarreled, but only over matters of small import.
Perhaps madame can recreate for us one of the quarrels of small import?
Yes, your lordship. It was after one of my husband's business trips. He came to me in the garden immediately upon his return.
Well, it is suitable and pleasing to me to find my wife in her garden picking flowers.
I am happy to please, my lord.
Oh, come, Anne. My name is Eve. And it is Eve who has brought a pretty bauble for your neck. Here, open it.
Oh. It is beautiful. It's magnificent. And I thank you.
Ah, you are a beautiful creature, my Anne. I missed you.
Then why do you not take me with you? Oh. I should not be so lonely then.
The city is no fit place for young wives. Why do you find it so irksome here at Castle Kerfol while I'm away?
Oh, it isn't irksome, but I feel I am a prisoner here. I cannot even pick a flower in my garden without having a waiting woman at my heels. Wherever I go here, I am watched.
You are protected and honored.
From whom do I need to be protected? And I am not a queen that I need such honors.
Ah, a man who has a treasure like you at home, Anne, does not leave the key in the lock when he goes abroad.
And this, your lordship, was the only point of contention between us. I'm sorry. My apologies to the court and to your lordship. But these memories are sometimes very painful for me. When my husband returned from his following journey, he brought me a gift, the one I loved the best. It was a small brown silken Chinese dog that he'd purchased from a sailor at Bordeaux. Perhaps it was true that I loved that little dog in place of the child I never had. But Eve seemed pleased that I was so fond of Chinois. I named him that. And the little dog and I were inseparable. And one day, when I'd fallen asleep in my room with Chinois at my feet, I noticed it.
What's this? What have you done with my magnificent necklace? Do I see it around the neck of a dog?
Oh, Eve, I'm sorry if you're angry that I used the necklace in such a foolish fashion.
Oh, well, not at all, my dear. I know how much you love Chinois, and it is a compliment to me that you place one of my presents around the other's neck.
Oh, thank you, Eve.
That was not the reason I woke you. I had to tell you that I was struck by your resemblance to my great-grandmother, Julianne de Corneau, lying in the chapel with her feet on a little dog.
Oh.
You do not like the thought?
Well, it is somewhat uncomfortable. Still, perhaps when I am dead, you might place me beside her, also carved in marble, with my dog at my feet.
You shall have your monument, if you earn it.
And I swear I shall be faithful, with my little Chinois at my feet.
And you were not faithful. You were discovered, and you took your revenge by killing the Baron.
No. No, your lordship. I have said that I am not an adulteress. I swear that I am not. André was my friend, my dear friend. He was a man who was not as cruel as my husband, but he was no more than a friend.
Do you deny that you met him secretly the night your husband was killed?
I have never denied that.
Then why did you go meet him secretly at midnight if it were not to commit adultery?
I went
to ask him to take me away. Because I was certain that my husband was going to kill me.
What a difference in lifestyles 3 or 4 centuries make. Today, if a woman commits adultery, she's just as likely to write a book detailing her experiences. In the 17th century, a husband would have been allowed to kill an unfaithful wife. I'll be back with Act Two in just a moment.
Magazine, sir?
Yes. Time magazine, please, stewardess.
Oh, golly, that man across the aisle just took the last copy of Time we have. Sorry, magazine.
Pardon me?
Yes?
I noticed you haven't started reading your Time magazine yet.
No, you couldn't.
But you haven't.
I'm writing a letter to my mother, and when I'm finished, I'm going to enjoy Time. Don't try to peek inside of it, sir.
Stewardess.
Yes, sir.
This man isn't reading the Time magazine you gave.
I'm writing a letter first.
To his mommy.
Don't be nasty.
All I want.
Sir, couldn't this gentleman
just
here?
Just let me glance at the theater section.
No.
Modern Living?
No.
One little book review.
Look, I know how enjoyable Time magazine is to read. He'll start reading one article and another, and by the time he's finished, we'll be in Budapest.
I have a speed reading diploma.
I don't.
Problem here, stewardess.
Not really, Captain. This man here has the last copy of Time magazine, but he's writing a letter to his mommy.
Sir, you'll have to give up one or the other.
Yes. All right. Here.
Dear mommy, I'm up in a big airplane.
Time makes everything more interesting, including you.
Are you giving your children all the attention they deserve? Naturally, we all wish we had more time for our families. This is Susan Strasberg for the National Society for the Prevention of Blindness. And as a mother, I think the health and safety of our children's eyesight is one thing we can't afford to neglect. Potentially dangerous toys shouldn't find their way into children's unsupervised playtime, and hazardous household items should be kept well out of reach. 90% of all eye accidents that occur to children are preventable. 2/3 of these accidents occur during play or sport, and most of these children are unsupervised. If that happens, then parents are obviously not doing their job. We must teach our children how to play safely and safeguard their vision. For free information on children's eye safety, write Prevent Blindness, Box 426, New York, New York, 10019. The address again, Box 426, New York, New York, 10019.
People who see ghosts differ from people who see UFOs. The latter can't wait to tell the world that they have seen these strange, glowing, elliptical-shaped objects floating around our planet, while those who have seen ghosts are somehow reluctant to mention the fact. Of course, the lady in today's tale was thoroughly convinced that what she had seen were simply a number of dogs, not ghosts at all. But this belief was under severe strain.
I had become so involved in reading the trial of Anne de Cornault, recorded so completely in the ancient and crumbling book, The History of the Assizes of the Duchy of Brittany, that I didn't even hear Henri's rapping at my door.
Anne! Anne, are you all right?
Oh, I'm sorry, Henri. I was lost in a courtroom 400 years ago with that poor frightened girl, Anne de Cornault.
Well, how do you like my ancestor, André?
Well, so far, he's only been mentioned briefly, but really, I am haunted with Anne, with the girl. I feel chilled as I read her testimony. I feel as though I were she, there in the court. Sometimes I even know what she's going to say before she says it. It's scary, Henri.
Well, then stop reading.
Oh, no. No, not a chance. Not after I saw those dogs today. You were joking, weren't you, when you said there weren't any dogs at Castle Carfaut?
No, Anne, I wasn't. There are no dogs at Carfaut.
After Henri left me, I returned to the book and immediately found myself back in the 17th century courtroom, so involved that I actually seemed to be living the tortured life of that poor girl, now dead
some 400 years.
You ask us to believe that your husband would have given you permission to journey to Sainte Barbe?
Yes, your lordship. The pilgrimage was made in the company of a lady much respected by the Baron. The lady, his aged aunt, and I were on a journey to Sainte Barbe. It was a religious pilgrimage.
Does it not seem almost doubly sinful for a woman to meet her paramour on a religious pilgrimage?
André de Lanrivain was never my paramour. I'd seen him once or twice at Castle Carfol when he visited there with his father, but he never exchanged more than civil greetings with me. And thus, what he said to me at Sainte Barbe was a shock to me and a surprise.
And scandalous?
No, I did not think so. We met by chance under the aspen trees as the procession was coming out of the chapel.
I pity you,
he said. And I was surprised because I had no thought that anybody considered me an object of pity.
He said no more?
Only one thing.
Call me when you need me. As an ear to listen and a mouth to talk.
As I've said, my husband was away a great deal. My life at Castle Carfol was indeed lonely. My little dog, Chinois, was always with me, and he gave me great pleasure. But more and more I thought of the meeting with André de Lanrivain and of his words. And one day I decided to test him to ascertain whether he meant what he said. Of all the maids my husband had serving me, there was one I trusted more than the others, and it was she I sent with a note, certain that there would be no answer. But I was wrong, and he was waiting in the copse near the edge of the forest, as his note said he would be.
Milady, you came after all.
It was I who sent for you, and you thought I would not be here.
I dared not hope.
André,
I feel you have no life at all with the Baron. Your gentleness and beauty is not for him. Where are you going?
No, I see now. It was not only foolish, but it was wrong of me to have come.
Please, milady, don't go. Just tell me what you want from me, and you shall have it.
There must never be a discussion of my husband. He shall not be mentioned.
Agreed. That is a beautiful little dog you have in your arms.
Yes, I love him very much. He was a gift from the Baron.
I see.
Which was very thoughtful. But much as I love my little Chinois, I admit to loneliness. I long to hear a human voice other than my maid's.
If my voice will help, you shall hear it as often as you wish.
And how often did you meet?
Twice more, your lordship, and each time very briefly.
And your husband knew nothing of these meetings?
I have reason to believe he did not. You see, at the time of our second meeting, I had already realized that we must put an end to it.
But there must be a reason. Surely I deserve at least that from you, Anne. Some reason why we should no longer meet.
Because I do not wish it.
If there's one thing I know, it's that you have enjoyed our conversations as much as I. Perhaps more. You've told me so.
No, never.
Well, perhaps not in so many words. But I can tell. By the flush on your cheek, the spark that kindles in your eyes when I tell you of Paris and other cities I've
seen.
No.
What you have just said is reason enough why we must no longer meet. I find myself looking forward to it too much. I know it will be like a drug to me. And the more meetings we have, the more I shall want. I must stop now while I can.
But we have done nothing wrong. Committed no sin in the eyes of the Lord.
Thank you, André, for the moments of light you have given me. I shall always be grateful. But we can meet no more.
But you did. And why? What changed your mind?
A message from him, your lordship, saying that he was going away for a long, long time, and he asked for only one farewell meeting.
If I knew you would come to bid me farewell whenever I leave the country, then I should try to leave every day.
André, where are you going?
When do you leave?
I go to the British Isles on some business, which is not without peril. I shall be away for 6 or 7 months. Would you not give me some keepsake? Something of small value to you, but which I will cherish always, since it will speak to me of you during the long months of separation?
Well, gladly. I would give what you ask, but I brought no jewels. I wear no rings. I have no trinkets. And then, though I knew it was wrong, I took the small necklace from around the throat of little Chinois, and I offered it to André. At first he refused, but I urged. No, I insisted. And finally he took it. And afterwards I was sorry. And that very night, at dinner with my husband...
Well, your little dog has a giant appetite, my love.
You mustn't spoil him by overfeeding.
Better overfeeding than overpetting, the way you do. Mm-hmm. Well, here, here. Come here, Chinois. Here, here, here. Here's a piece of meat. There. Good dog. Well done. What's this? Where is his necklace?
Oh, he... He lost it.
Lost it?
He was running in the park. In the undergrowth. And when I picked him up, I noticed that the necklace was gone. I spent a good time during the day searching for it, but I couldn't find it.
Well, perhaps it will be found one day. Have some more wine, madame. It's an excellent vintage.
No, thank you.
Then I shall drink alone. Are you, interested in hearing about my day in Rennes?
If my lord will excuse me, I have a slight headache. I should like to retire.
Well, of course, of course. I have my bottle for company, and you... when you get to your room, you will have your little dog.
Chinois! Mon pauvre... My little Chinois.
Madame, there is something wrong, something troubling you.
Chinois, he is dead.
Oh, now, how did that happen?
I came into my room and I found him like this, lying across my pillows. Someone has strangled him.
A pity, madame. But there is a bright side to every tragedy, eh? You see, here, your necklace has been found.
Found? Would to heaven it had not been. Oh, take it away, my lord. I never want to see it again. After the use to which it's been put, wound round my little dog's throat, to snuff out his life.
Madam, I'm displeased that you smile so little.
I'm sorry, my lord. I shall try.
No, 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 nonsense. I have arranged for some entertainment at Castle Kerfol when I go next to Camper on business. Entertainment, I think, that will please you.
That is very kind of you, my lord.
You are so selfish of me. I would like to see some small measure of life appear in a wife who is at least 40 years younger than I am.
Yes, my lord.
And so for 2 days, while I am at Quimper, I have given the gypsies permission to come here. And in return, they promised to put on some entertainments for you. Let us hope, madame, they serve to put you in better spirits.
Oh, it's lovely. It's so lovely. And the dogs are wonderful. Tell me, does it take you long to train them?
Not too long, milady. The ones who are trained help me with the ones who have to learn.
Oh, look, this one is the dearest, I think. Am I mistaken? Or does he have one blue and one brown eye?
Milady has a sharp eye. And he seems to like you.
Yes. Would you... I mean, would it be much trouble for you to train another dog if...
Milady wants to buy the little dog, of course. For 3 golden coins, you may have the dog.
Oh, thank you very much. I'll have one of my maids get you the coins.
Have you taught your maids to lie to me, madame?
I cannot understand your question, my lord.
When I returned to Castle Kerfall this evening, they told me you enjoyed the gypsy entertainment I arranged for you. That you were gay and bright with laughter. And yet for me, there's only silence.
I am sorry, my lord. Do I have my lord's permission to go to my room?
Very well.
I shall return, my lord, immediately.
I hope in a more cheerful disposition than heretofore.
Oh, no.
What is it?
Oh.
What has alarmed you?
Oh, it's my little dog. Here.
Oh, yes. I see he has been strangled. It would seem, madame, that you have bad luck with your pets.
Everyone knows that the ASPCA represents the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. There is, however, no ASPCM, which could stand for the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Mates. Perhaps if there were such a society, there might be fewer divorces, and even more important, fewer husband-wife murders. We'll be back with Act 3 in just a moment.
Well, sir, I see you're one of the many people who bought a new Buick Century.
That's right. Boy, you want to talk about roomy and comfortable. Just take a look in there. Go ahead.
But you have curtains hanging in your car.
Yes, and wallpaper, too.
Well, why's that?
Well, we like the Century so much, we decided to sell a house and live in it.
Huh. Well, doesn't that get just a little crowded?
Oh, I suppose it might after a while, but, we aren't home that much.
Oh.
Yeah, we got a little Skyhawk up north.
Buick. Dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Oh, will it be Bill Soda? Shaving cream or a prescription?
It's my hemorrhoids, Mr. Edwards. Pain. Itching.
Well, most of my customers use this.
Preparation H?
Well, in many cases, Preparation H relieves occasional pain and itch for hours.
Hey, that's great.
And Preparation H actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation.
I'll buy that.
Doctor tested Preparation H comes in ointment or suppositories. Soothes pain and itch and actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissue. Now use only as directed.
Cancer hasn't stopped 1.5 million Americans from living full, active lives. One of them is golf champion Gene Littler.
You really never know how many friends you have until something like this comes about. People write me now that have the same problem, and I write back to them, try to give them a little bit of a boost. And hopefully this is a help to them, and this is one reason that I want to continue on the tour and play well, because I think that I can be in some small way an inspiration to a lot of people that are afflicted with this disease, and I think that I can be of some help.
Gene Littler, a real champion. This is Jose Ferrer. Join him and join me in fighting cancer. Give generously to your American Cancer Society.
With a little bit of hard work, a lot of support from your family, and a lot of faith in God, why, anything's possible.
We want to wipe out cancer in your lifetime.
It's a scientific fact that some people have a low threshold of pain, while others can withstand a remarkable amount of punishment before they even feel the slightest twinge. It would seem to me only logical that some people would be more sensitive to the influences and specters of the past and would find themselves powerfully affected by merely hearing or reading about past events. So I completely understand the reaction of our very modern, liberated 20th century Paula Randall to the events in the La Rivière Chateau in Brittany.
I had been reading for hours. And I suppose I made a fool of myself later that night with my behavior. But there were extenuating circumstances. Earlier, I had told Henri de Lanrivain how much I had identified with the girl, with Anne de Cornol, whose trial I was reading about. And I had just reached the part where she found her second little dog strangled, and suddenly, the lights in my room went out. I didn't panic, not then. But I had been reading in bed, and in the dark, I reached for the bedside table to find a match to strike a light. And my hand felt something soft and furry. And it was then that I screamed and screamed and woke the house and brought Henri bursting through my door.
Paula, Paula, what is it? What has happened?
The dog. Henri, her dead little dog. It was next to my bed. I felt it.
Nonsense. There's nothing here. Look. It's one of your bedroom slippers with a fur on it. Look for yourself.
Well, I can't see it in the dark. Why did those lights go out?
It's almost dawn. We switch back from the emergency generator now. And there are about 10 minutes during which we're without electricity. Of course, not many people are usually up at this hour.
I'm sorry, but I was so frightened. Henri, why did you give me this book, this history of the trials of the Duchy of Brittany? Why did you want me to read this?
No ulterior motives, my pet. I thought you'd be interested in buying Castle Kerfol. I wanted you as a neighbor. And then you saw the dogs. That clinched it.
Yes, but other people must see them. You told me the caretaker and his wife leave on that particular day, so...
Well, they live here. They have ties.
What are you saying?
Perhaps you shouldn't finish.
No, you go now. And apologize to the household for my behavior. And we will have coffee after I've finished reading. Henri was disturbed, but he left. And I went back again to the history of the assizes of the Duchy of Brittany. And again the ancient words on the printed page worked their magic. And I was transported back in time to that drafty courtroom.
And did it not occur to you to confront your husband and ask him if he was indeed responsible for killing the dogs? And if so, what were his reasons?
I felt that would be useless.
Why useless?
You did not know the Baron, your lordship. I hoped that by my telling this story, you would come to know something of the mind of a man who could kill innocent animals simply because he imagined that his name had been dishonored.
We have only your word that it was his imagination.
And the word of André de Lanrivain.
Who may have been your accomplice. Finish your testimony.
There's little more to tell. I suffered in my loneliness, and the winter wore on, and then the gypsies returned.
But Milady has not bought anything. Nothing at all.
No. I'm not in the mood for buying.
Not even for buying happiness?
No one can buy happiness.
To the gypsy, many things are possible that are not known by you, madame. Take, for instance, this pear-shaped pendant. This is a most remarkable trinket, milady.
Yes, it looks very nice.
This pendant can tell the future and bring happiness.
Oh, nonsense.
Of course. But the trinket is pretty and an exceptional bargain. For you, milady, this will be only 2 livres.
No, I am not interested.
Look, it is so cunningly contrived. See, it opens. A cunning contrivance. And...
Wait.
It's yours.
Wait a moment. Wasn't there a piece of paper in it?
It is yours, milady. You will not regret it.
No, that paper. I saw it. It had the Lanrivain seal.
I did not notice. No, milady, I should not open it here. The privacy of your chamber would be more suitable.
My dear lady, I have returned. I must see you. I will be at the side door of the castle after midnight. The Baron has told me he is staying the night in Rennes. André. Yes.
I have returned, madam.
Oh, no.
And I would like your presence at supper.
Oh, good Lord. What am I to do now? It is a pleasant surprise to find you back tonight, my husband. I gather your business in Rennes went so well that you could return so soon?
It went as I expected.
Milord, tell me some of the interesting things that happened to you in Rennes.
Madame, I find your prattle boring, and this evening it is I who have the headache. I also feel feverish.
Is there something I can do? A poultice, perhaps?
You can keep quiet. Good night, madame. I trust you sleep well, with nothing to disturb pleasant dreams.
And so, your lordship, I returned to my room, terrified. I was certain that in some way my husband had found out about André, and that he would be there waiting at the side door, and that he would kill André and me. I waited in my room, but then I opened my door and stole along the passage and listened at my husband's door. I could hear him breathing heavily and with difficulty, but I was still fearful. And I went back to my room and I waited until the moon had set through the trees of the park. And then I went back again and listened at the door to my husband's room. He still seemed to be asleep. I had only two thoughts: to get down the stairs silently, to get to the door, to unbolt it, and warn André, tell him that I wished him to take me away. I reached the door and unbolted it and opened it.
Anne, I must tell you...
André, you must go. He has come back. I think because he knew that you were coming. Please go. Go now.
But Anne, I
want to go away with you, but not now. Go. Go now.
And these noises you heard from your husband's room were after you had dismissed de Lanrivain and closed the castle door?
Yes, your lordship.
What did you do next?
I started up the stairs and I listened.
What did you hear?
I heard dogs snarling and panting.
What dogs? What dogs?
I don't know.
And how long did you remain listening on the stairs?
Just a few minutes. And then when I reached the room, it was dark. And I found my husband's flint and steel. And I struck a spark for the candle. And then I saw him lying there, dead.
And the dogs?
The dogs were gone.
Gone? Where to?
I don't know. There was no way for them to get out. And we had no dogs at Castle Carrefour.
You would have us believe, madame, that your husband was killed by a pack of invisible dogs?
No! If it please your lordship, the bites which caused the death of Baron de Cornault were clearly visible at the inquest.
Well, madame, can you give the court any idea where the supposed dogs came from?
My dead dogs. Mine. The dogs he killed so cruelly for no reason. My dead dogs! A 20th century sun was brightening every corner of my room when I'd finished and put down the history of the trial of Anne de Cornault. And I sat there thinking. I was emotionally drained when Henri de Lanrivain knocked at my door. Yes, come in.
Ah, you look beautiful. But you seem terribly worried, my lovely Paula.
Henri, you can forget about my buying Castle Carrefour. I would not want to live there now if someone gave it to me.
Oh, but Sherry, what you read happened 400 years ago. People were different.
Henri, you forget. I saw those dogs today. I knew nothing of all this, and yet I saw those dogs today. Do you think I could even consider living there
knowing what happened to that poor girl, Anna Cornell.
Well, as a matter of fact, Paula, you realize she got off quite easily for a woman accused of murder in those days.
Easily? She was paroled to the de Cornell family. She spent the rest of her life shut up in Castle Kerfall.
This has really gotten under your skin.
Do you know, Henri, I think I have been fooling myself about wanting to settle down. I really hadn't told Henri the truth. I'd told him only half the truth. I saw the dogs at Castle Kerfall. I couldn't understand why I should have seen them, unless it was a warning to me. At least I took it to be so. And thus for me, Castle Kerfall will remain a haunting, a disturbing, and an unresolved memory.
I was impressed with this story of Castle Kerfall and the dogs and told it to a psychiatrist friend of mine. When I finished, he smiled the smile of a man who has all the answers and said, "It's amazing to what lengths a woman will go to avoid facing up to the fact that she's really afraid of marriage." He believed that. Do you? I'll be back shortly.
Well, I've finally done it.
Done what?
Given up gambling.
No more gin rummy, poker, the races.
Nope. From now on, when I have a package to mail, I'm going to put it on a sure thing.
What sure thing?
Greyhound's Next Bus Out Package Express Service.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. It's guaranteed. All I have to do is call to find out when buses are leaving and take my package to the Greyhound station at least a half hour early. Greyhound guarantees my package will go on the bus I choose, with special handling all the way. Almost any delay, and they automatically refund the special handling charge. For most packages going less than 500 miles, Greyhound schedules next day service. Many packages get there in hours. Whether I ask for Next Bus Out service or use their regular economy service, they notify the person on the other end when the package arrives.
It sounds like Greyhound's Next Bus Out service would be handy for business shipments, too.
For sure. Greyhound's Next Bus Out Package Express service. It takes the gamble out of mailing a package.
Now that's a good bet.
Anheuser-Busch, headquarters, St. Louis, Missouri.
Before I return tomorrow, I think I should tell you the world's shortest horror story. I hope you haven't heard it. It goes like this. After the atomic holocaust, there's only one man left in the world. He knows that everyone else has been killed. As he sits alone in his bomb shelter, suddenly there comes a knock at the door. Our cast included Mercedes McCambridge, William Redfield, Ian Martin, and Guy Sorrell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Greyhound Package Express and Time Magazine. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams. Mm-hmm.
not quite such terrifying proportions, but one that does cause us some wonder. The project engineer for the Viking 1 space robot orbiting Mars says the probe has made a flawless maneuver today into an egg-shaped orbit around the red planet. 2 weeks from now, it is scheduled to land on Mars, taking pictures on its way down and searching for possible life. This is KIXI Seattle. Time now for news.
CBS News. The British Embassy in Beirut has announced that Westerners who want to leave Lebanon will be evacuated by sea today on an unarmed U.S. Navy support ship, which will take them to Athens. I'm Rita Sands reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Plans to evacuate Americans and Britons overland to Damascus were scrubbed for the second day today because of fighting along the escape route to Syria. An embassy source says the U.S. Navy ship will pull close to shore and rendezvous with the evacuees off of Beirut Beach. The source declined to say just how the evacuees would be taken to the ship. The sea trip to Athens was reportedly ordered personally by President Ford and will take about 40 hours. Meanwhile, the whole seafront area around the British and American embassies, including the Riviera Hotel, where the Americans and Britons have been gathering, has been sealed off by Palestinian commandos. CBS News continues after this.
Hear ye, hear ye. Announcing America's bicentennial birthday weekend on the CBS Radio Network.
I mean, sure, we got our faults, but you name one country that doesn't. Some of the things you say...
One of the things I think of about America, it seems to be their willingness to try new things, that we're not...
And all to receive respect. I've learned that you can demand respect as a man, as a black man, if you give respect.
Listen as Americans speak out in America, This I Believe, the 35 broadcast bicentennial weekend special with CBS News' Dan Rather on July 3rd, 4th, and 5th. CBS News has traveled the country to find out what Americans believe about our nation. Hear them on America, This I Believe. Then July 4th itself, stay tuned for two CBS News 30-minute specials, Festival for the 4th. Join in our nation's biggest birthday ever over the July 4th weekend on the CBS Radio Network.
In state caucuses and conventions over the past 2 days, President Ford has increased his delegate total by 38. But Ronald Reagan did better, winning an extra 55 delegates to the Republican National Convention. President Ford still has the lead, but it's smaller now, with just 73 votes more than Reagan. Jimmy Carter picked up 20 more delegates from Texas and 6 more from Arkansas. The Democratic Party Rules Committee met Saturday night. Connie Chung has a report from Washington.
During a heated meeting, Jimmy Carter's forces yielded to a group of black Democrats who want to require that state parties adopt a timetable to achieve representation of minorities, women, and youth in proportion to their presence in the Democratic electorate. The matter will be brought up before the Democratic Convention Rules Committee, which meets tomorrow. Carter forces attempted to compromise with the blacks because they were concerned that the language of the blacks' proposal could be interpreted as a return to the controversial quota system of 1972. Carter aides feared that such an interpretation could become a campaign issue with the Republicans. But the blacks, led by Gary, Indiana Mayor Richard Hatcher, called Carter's compromise a default, and several black Carter delegates said they were being betrayed and would have to reconsider their support for Carter. After an hour of frantic negotiations and frequent calls to Georgia, the Carter forces relented and agreed to the blacks' proposal with only minor modifications. Connie Chung, CBS News, Washington.
The Canadian Airline Pilots Association has ordered its members to stop work in an hour from now. They're caught in a dispute over the use of French in-flight communications. Air traffic controllers say a bilingual flight control would jeopardize safety. They're threatening to strike over the issue, and the Pilots Association says it cannot guarantee the air travel safety while the controllers are embroiled in the dual language dispute. Now this.
Get some more wood over here.
All right.
Here. Give me the torch.
There it goes.
Yeah, we'll teach her.
You'd think a white woman would know better.
In 1860, Myrtilla Minor, a white woman, had started a school for black children in Rhode Island. She was harassed in the daily press and forced to move from place to place. Miss Minor did everything possible to keep her school open until it was burned down. To commemorate her ideals and courage, a college in Washington, D.C. was named in her honor, the Minor Teachers College. Supporting black education once meant putting your life or liberty on the line. Fortunately, today, we just need your signature. Please write a check to the United Negro College Fund and continue a great American tradition. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
The planet Mars now has an unmanned U.S. spacecraft circling around it, and Kessner of Station KNX in Pasadena reports.
Viking 1, which is scheduled to land on Mars July 4th, is now orbiting the red planet. An orbital insertion maneuver in which Viking's rocket engine was fired for 38 minutes was successfully completed today. Viking project manager Jim Martin voiced the obvious.
After 8 years, we're finally in orbit. I got to admit, I'm relieved. It's a big gate to get through. And everything just worked just perfect. The engine, spacecraft performance, from all indications I've seen, are right on.
On Monday, Viking's rocket engine will be fired again to synchronize the spacecraft's orbital rotation with the rotation of Mars. This is Ann Kessner for CBS News at Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Pasadena, California.
There is a chance the July 4th landing could be delayed. Rita Sands, CBS News.
So, everything is A-OK at the moment for Viking, but there is just one little note of doubt. 6 minutes past 11, you're listening to KIXI, Seattle.